Hey, Tom.
Hey, Amanda.
So you know that movie in the 80s about a group of friends, a couple kids going out to fight some monsters and save their town?
Oh, I love The Goonies.
No, I'm clearly talking about Monster Squad.
Oh, well, in that case, I guess that's what we're going to talk about today.
And can we talk about?
Sean!
Phoebe, handle life, okay? You're being a spaz. Ow! God! You bit me, you brat! I'm telling Mom on you!
Would ya look? It's okay, you guys. He's friends with us. Come on, don't be chicken shit.
Can we talk about, despite whatever you're about to say, the epic 1980s movie Monster Squad?
Yes, we can. I love your reaction because I watched it the other day for the first time. You've been stressing to me I need to see this movie, and I've been avoiding giving you any inkling of what I think of this movie, any thoughts.
And what did I say when you texted me today and said, I watched Monster Squad?
I was making you nervous because I still haven't been on.
I said, I'm guessing you hated it because you did not text me at all while watching it.
No, I was saving it all for the podcast. Okay. I didn't want to let anything on.
And okay. I do want to just jump this off by saying I had never seen Monster Squad up until probably, I don't know, when I started dating my fiance. So 13 years ago, 12 years ago, we were talking about our favorite Halloween movies. And he said, well, mine's definitely Monster Squad. And I was like, what the hell is that? He said they used to watch it every year on Halloween or around Halloween time. And I had never seen it. And I shit on it hard until I watched it with him. And it's it makes me feel like an 80s kid and proud of it.
Yeah. No, that's fair.
I can just tell because I know you.
No.
How this is going to go. So I'm ready. I'm ready.
No. You want to get my critiques out of the way? You want to get those out of the way first?
Can I just say a blanket statement here? This is not, to me, a critiquable movie. Mm-hmm. This is meant to be a mess. This is not a cinematic masterpiece.
All right. No, I understand. I had a theory about it. And then I did some research to figure out like where this movie came from, which to me, that's actually really interesting. The movie was written by the guy who directed it, who is Fred Decker. And I'll get back to him in a second. And Shane Black. Do you know who Shane Black is?
I don't think I do, actually.
Okay. So Shane Black is a very famous writer and then turned writer-director. So he wrote Lethal Weapon.
Oh,
which was like
one
of the biggest. Yeah. He wrote Last Action Hero, which is one of the best like 90s movies that exists. Fight me on that. The Long Kiss Goodnight. And then he wrote, and his directorial debut of something he had written was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
He wrote and directed Iron Man 3.
I mean, rake that money in, baby.
Yeah. Which Kiss Kiss Bang Bang featured Robert Downey Jr. And Robert Downey Jr., I think, advocated for him to do Iron Man 3. He also did The Nice Guys in 2016, which is one of my favorite movies. And then The Predator, which was the new Predator movie that he did. But to go all the way back to this, this was like the first movie he wrote with Fred Decker, who he went to school with. And
wait, didn't Fred Decker get like kicked out of a couple film schools?
I don't know much about Fred Decker, to be honest. That's possible. I don't know much about him. But what was interesting to me is that the entire premise of this movie are these kids who are obsessed with monsters and legendary monsters. And that was Fred and Shane. Like,
that's amazing.
They wrote themselves, basically. But this was 1987, right? And so
best year in the world. I was born. Absolute best year. Yeah, absolutely. Clearly.
My assumption watching this was that it was, let's make another Goonies, but around Halloween. Like, that's what it felt like it was trying to do.
Okay.
And at first, I'm cynical about it, of course, because I'm like, all right, well, you know, it's like, you know, Mom, I want to watch The Goonies. It's like, well, we have The Goonies at home, and you come home and it's Monster Squad. But in its own right, like, I appreciate what they were doing. To your point, you had warned me about this. It's like, yeah, there's some stuff that's, didn't necessarily Like they're dropping the F bomb, like the slur F bomb in the right in like the first sentence of the movie.
Oh, that like part, first... yeah, that was not good.
Yeah.
That was not good. I thought you were talking about Amanda's F bomb.
Oh, no. But no, it was, I mean, it was cool in that aspect. I liked the movie. I did. My major critique was that I felt like it needed to be fleshed out more. Like it like could have been polished up a little bit better. Aside from that, it was a good movie. It was a good 80s movie.
Okay, well, a little backstory on this. The whole thing is, it's like you said, they're obsessed with monsters. It's supposed to be a nod to the, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, Universal Studios was known for their monster movies, right? Yeah. So that's where you get your Frankenstein, your Dracula, your, you know, swamp monsters, all those things.
Yeah.
This was a nod to that. That's what they wanted to do. But yeah, they had to tread very lightly because they didn't want to get sued by Universal. Universal originally was going to make the movie and then they dropped them.
Huh.
So the budget they thought they were going to have went away.
Yeah.
So okay, they were picked up by TriStar, which had a much lower budget, and visual effects team had to get very creative with a little bit of money.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it definitely feels like that. And the other thing I'll add there too is, it quite famously a couple of years ago, Universal was like, hey, we have all these monsters. We have this entire catalog of monsters.
Yeah.
Let's make a cinematic universe and use Tom Cruise as the kickoff with The Mummy. And then they were going to do like a Dracula movie and all these other movies. And then no one went to go see the movie because everyone's like, we don't care about these monsters, like in a serious cinematic universe. And so they scrapped the entire thing.
Now, I will say Stan Winston, who is like legendary in the monster creating world for Universal, he did this movie.
Yeah.
So they change certain things about each character. So Dracula doesn't have the widow's peak that Dracula normally does.
Yeah.
Frankenstein's neck bolts, they put them up by his temples. And Wolfman's pointy ears are more like lupine, as good old Stan Winston says, than Universal did. And the reason they did that is because that's the way they could have these monsters without getting sued by Universal. Because Universal straight up said, I don't want it.
I mean, I obviously just watched this. You've watched it before. I don't know if you noticed who the Wolfman was. Do you know who played the Wolfman? Don't cheat. Don't Google it.
I don't know who played the Wolfman, but I did watch a TikTok about this, like, 6 months ago, and I was like, oh, I've got to remember this when we do the podcast, and I have no idea who it is, but I know it's somebody.
Uncle Rico from
Napoleon Dynamite. Wait, didn't we talk about that?
Well, we talked about it because he's also in The White Lotus.
Okay. I was going to say, I thought we talked about something having to do with this.
Yeah, he is Greg in The White Lotus who marries Tanya.
Wow. Okay.
Jennifer Coolidge's character. Yeah. Oh, who, by the way, is still technically alive
in the
White Lotus universe, so he might come back. And maybe he'll come back as a Wolfman, so that'll be the full circle.
Good, as long as he dies.
All right, my other critique. I swear there's only a few. And again, maybe it's because I'm drawing a parallel to The Goonies, which I feel like is a fair comparison. Like, it's a bunch of, like, ragtag team of kids who go on an adventure and, you know, fighting or with some, you know, supernatural thing.
And just to point out, The Goonies did come out 2 years before this did.
Yes.
So,
and that's why,
so
yeah, I thought there was a connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what I was going to say is, I feel, and it's funny because right before this, I was confusing one of the kids in this for David Faustino. It's Michael Faustino. David Faustino was the kid from Married with Children.
Yes.
Michael Faustino is just this kid in this movie and then like some other random small parts, to the point that even Google gets, if you pull up the cast list to this, Michael Faustino's photo is a picture of his brother, David Faustino.
It's so funny. And I clicked on it. I was like, wait, no, that's him. And it's like, they just don't care about this guy so much. They don't even have his picture up.
But part of me was also like, I didn't think the kids were great actors. I feel like
they're
an asshole critiquing.
Kids,
I know.
In the 80s. I know people called it a ripoff. I get it. But it was, I'm trying to find another movie that this could be a comparison to, because going into it, obviously I had not seen it since 2010, but it's clearly low budget.
Yeah.
You can see that.
Yeah.
So like, they got people in The Goonies that had already, you know, most of them had acting jobs already. These kids were seasoned. Yeah. Not the case over here.
No, absolutely not.
Not the case. And the little girl turned down the part in Fatal Attraction to be in this movie.
Oh, geez.
May not have been the best idea.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing. I'll give this to you. I love these types of movies that I think I've even said it here before. There aren't enough of these movies where it's like kids going on an adventure to go, you know, fight a monster or go on an adventure or like whatever. Like we don't need a Goonies reboot, but I'm okay with other Goonies-esque movies of kids kind of running their own like little world, going on their own adventure, a la The Little Rascals, which I think is why I liked like the 90s reboot of The Little Rascals and things like that. So,
I loved that.
Yeah.
By the way, so just for what it's worth.
But to your point, yeah, I mean, you can tell this is low budget, but again, if you're a kid, it's a bunch of kids going on an adventure and that's fun and cool. And like they're trying to uncover something, but yeah,
I mean, look at the premise of it. And I feel like other movies have kind of taken from this as well. Like the main hangout and the place that they go to be kids, a treehouse with baseball cards, just like Sandlot. Sandlot took that same premise. Treehouse, baseball cards.
Yeah.
And to me, it's just good old fashioned, unadulterated, ridiculous fun. We all know how I am and the way that that little girl who's Ashley Bank, who plays little Phoebe, the way she just takes little Frankenstein's finger and holds it. And she just loves him so much. It's like me with, like you said, with Chunk with the Goonies. I just, I like them and I like the monsters and I like all of the,
Can I just back up too? You mentioned Chunk from the Goonies. And one of the things, me and my son looked at each other like, wait, what? Like when this happened, because in the beginning of the movie, we're introduced to the Chunk-esque character, right? If we're running a parallel.
Chunk Light.
Okay. Who... the kids are bullying him and they call him a name and I'm like, oh, that's whatever. But then that's his nickname the whole movie. They
it's
just
not
nicknamed
great.
Him. They call him
it's
Fat
not
Kid. His
yeah,
nickname
it's not
is
great.
Fat Kid.
It's not great.
But that was where I was like,
it's not great, you know, guys.
That's where it's like, there's all these like little parallels to the Goonies you can kind of make, like the one kid whose dad is connect, right? Because in the Goonies, Mikey, his dad works at the museum and that's the connection to that, right? And so here, there's monsters running about, and the main kid, his dad is the detective, right? He's the cop. And so it's like, all right, cool. Like, there's like those little lines, those little parallels. And then there's there's the husky kid. And in the Goonies, it's Chunk. And here, it's Fat Kid. Just Fat Kid.
Well, I mean, also not great that the bad guy, very Home Alone-esque, very Goonies-esque, the bad guy is like a creepy person that you find out is like, you know, your biggest ally. And they just call him Scary German Guy.
Yeah.
And
even at he's literally credited as Scary German Guy.
Scary German Guy.
They never give him a name. They're just like, at least Fat Kid becomes Horace, and there's been a little revisionist history of like, oh, that was his character name the whole time. Are you kidding? His friends call him Fat Kid. Yeah. I really didn't know what to make of like the greaser kid either, who just shows up and wants to be their friend, but
no, that's what you need. You need like the hot popular kid. It's the Josh Brolin. Duh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
You know what I mean? You need the heartthrob. Duh.
Yeah. Yeah.
The hot guy who slums it with the young kids and helps them out, just like in Stranger Things.
Oh, Stranger Things.
You've got the hot popular guy who slums it with the younger kids to fight the crime and fight the monsters. I like that.
I don't know if you made this connection either, but I don't know. Did you realize that the mom from the Goonies is also the mom in this?
No, I did not.
What's the same actress?
Well, we know she can play the part. Play the part.
You know, in Goonies, she's not as present because she's running around. She's got all these errands to do. You know, Consuela is following her around or whatever.
The worst, yes.
You know, this, she's like, I don't know, on the verge of getting divorced.
There's actually some really funny stuff that I think that you'll really appreciate. And I don't know if you saw this in your in your big studying. So the first scene of the movie that they had in mind, it was supposed to be. It does not exist, by the way. I'm just going to say this. But it was supposed to be in the initial script. There's Van Helsing storms Dracula's castle. And then Zeppelins and 100 men of horseback help fight Van Helsing. Okay. And in this sequence, when they priced it out, it would have been more than the budget of the original movie, the entire budget of the whole movie, just to do that. Just one scene. They said they were going to have 40 vampire brides riding horses. And Decker was like, sorry, because that was Black's idea. Obviously, he wrote the movie. He's like, we can't make this. That's 5 minutes of the movie. And the budget's already $100 million if we just make it with that. So they had to obviously scrap that.
But yeah.
Have you seen the people that were almost cast for certain parts?
I just realized, too, we sort of like glazed over everything. I want to just back up for 1 second. So I had never seen this movie before, and I don't think we've really explained what this movie is to anybody who hasn't
seen it. It's kids fighting monsters.
Okay.
I think we covered it. Well, the monsters are like, you know, like the swamp monster. You've got Dracula, you've got Frankenstein, you've got a mummy, and you've got Wolfman.
Yes.
Who has nards, by the way.
Right. And my son looked at me and he was like, I don't understand what's happening. When the
beginning, no one does.
So the beginning of the movie, we see a scene from years, years ago when they were trying to capture the monsters or something. And instead, I guess Van Helsing got captured. I kind of
missed
that part into like a little like amulet. And then we flash forward. And at some point there is an airplane carrying all the monsters from
Dracula.
Well, yeah. I thought, but didn't he also have Frankenstein's monster with him too?
I think it was just Dracula, but I'm going to watch it tomorrow and I'll let you know.
So Frankenstein's monster, I think, is there as well. It's just like a bunch of crates of things. That's what it was. Dracula is on there and there's the crate of Frankenstein's monster, which goes into the lake. You're
right. 100% correct.
Yes. And he gets into a fight with, well, that guy. It's the Uncle Rico from Napoleon Dynamite on the plane, who's one of the pilots. The other pilot, by the way, did you notice who the other guy was? He's that guy who's like mob movies and stuff. I forget his name.
No.
David Provol. Am I saying his name right?
I don't know. Let me look at his picture.
He was in Shawshank Redemption. He was Richie Aprile on The Sopranos. So.
Oh, I know who that is. Yes.
Yeah. And so anyway, I don't think we ever see him again. But anyway, so yeah. So then moving forward. So then all of a sudden, Dracula has a plan to like sort of take over the world, or I don't know.
He needs to get the amulet. He has to get the amulet. He's got to take over the world, and he's got to get his allies.
And these kids who are obsessed with monsters and Dracula and Frankenstein and all this other stuff, the crate and Dracula just happen to land in their town, while they also have their own like little treehouse club called the Monster Squad, which they only pen the name of their club during the events of the movie.
Yeah. And so when Frankenstein comes out of his crate, he doesn't want to help Dracula. He's not a bad guy. Frankenstein's a big, fat little sweetheart. He's the best.
Yes.
And he finds Phoebe, the little girl.
Well, he's sent to kill them. They have a journal written in German of Van Helsing. And the kid has it because the dad has it.
Yeah.
And Dracula's like, go get the journal and kill the kids if you have to. And he goes, okay, master, and goes to do it. And then a little version of you, sees this tiny giant Amanda monster. Mm-hmm. And she's like, want to be friends? And just hold his little finger. And he's like, friends.
Oh,
and then
God,
he's okay.
It's so cute. It like makes me, I'm not even kidding. This is how my brain works. It makes me like cry and tear up every time I watch that part. I'm like, oh, she sees the good in his heart.
And then all the kids are afraid of him when they show up. And she's like, no, look, he's good. And then
he's really good.
He's their friend. Yeah.
I don't remember what part it happens, but when she says, she calls them chicken shits and says that he's their friend. She's like, come on, you little chicken shits. He's really nice. Or whatever she says. It's so friggin' funny.
A lot of little kids cursing in this, which is just fine.
I love it.
But it's not.
I just love it.
I know. By the way, can I just back up 1 second?
Yes,
another
of course you
thing can. I mentioned that I'll let you get to your thing that you've been trying to get to this whole time.
I don't even know what I'm talking about, but go ahead.
Mary Ellen Trainer. So the mother from Monster Squad, but also the mother from The Goonies. Apparently, I didn't know this. She was married to Robert Zemeckis, who you may know because like he directed Forrest Gump. She was in Forrest Gump.
Yeah, but like why? Man, she really slummed it before that, huh?
Well, let me run down the movie she was in, because like she really latched on to this crew of like Shane Black and Robert Zemeckis. She was in The Goonies. She was in Lethal Weapon. She was the doctor. She was the psychiatrist in Lethal Weapon. She was also in Monster Squad. She was in Die Hard. She was Gail Wallen. She was the anchor in Die Hard. She was in Scrooge. She was in Ghostbusters 2, Lethal Weapon 2, Back to the Future 2, she's one of the police officers that finds Jennifer in the alleyway and takes her home.
Oh my
the
God. Futuristic
police. So she's in a bunch of stuff. All the other Lethal Weapons as well. Death Becomes Her. She was uncredited as Jenny's babysitter in Forrest Gump. She was the mother in Little Giants.
One of the greatest movies of our generation. Fight me on it.
She was in Freaky Friday. And then just to bring the room down, she passed away from pancreatic cancer in 2015.
Well, she left behind a killer resume.
Yeah. But she was like, apparently, according to, and this is all according to Wikipedia, she was like good friends with Kathleen Kennedy, who's a big producer and then went on to run the Lucasfilm division at
Yeah, not well, a bad Lucasfilm. Friend to have.
Yeah. So, and anyway, apparently she introduced Kathleen Kennedy to Steven Spielberg.
Are you kidding me?
No,
well, apparently. Thank you for all of that.
So behind the scenes, like she's done all this stuff. And then, she was married to Robert Zemeckis for 20 years. So behind the scenes, like I and it's really funny because like, you remember her from The Goonies and I saw her in this. And I'm like, oh, she looks familiar. She was always that familiar face in other movies.
So I have killer ADHD, as you've all realized listening to this podcast. But I love this meme that I always see. And it's like people with ADHD watching movies. And it's like, where have I seen that person before? Immediately grab their phone and they look it up to see where they do. And I do that all the time. But I have to credit you because you are so good at recognizing people and being like, where have I seen this face before? Oh, which is where funny I've seen the face before. And I'm not.
But in real life, I have like straight up facial blindness.
You do. Like, that is a fact. I can tell you that. I've seen it in action.
Yeah.
I've seen it in action.
Literally had people look me in the eye and say hello to me and know me. And I'm like, I don't know who this person is, like for the life of me. But if they're in a movie, if they're an actor or like they've singed into my brain from watching. Yeah, that I remember.
Well, I mean, to bring it back to the plot of the movie, one thing I do love about this movie is this is literally the dream of every kid growing up. I will say every kid from our generation growing up.
Yeah.
And it has all of the things that you need. The monsters live in a monster house that now they have to go in, but they're protected by the wards. So the monsters can't get the amulet because it's in a stone room underneath the monster house. And like, that is a little kid. I can think of like, if there was an abandoned house in town, you know, in every 80s, 90s movie, you're like, that's where the monsters live. That's where the ghosts live. That's where the spooky stuff happens. And this movie like made that true.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, that is where the monsters live. You were always correct with that.
Yeah.
And also I love that, like you had said, the Van Helsing's diary or whatever it is that they need to, you know, help save the world is written in German. So they go to scary German guy's house and that's why they become friends with scary German guy. And he ends up being like their friend and helps them take down the monsters. But I just love in true 80s, 90s fashion, the only way to do this is to get a female virgin to read the spells in German.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they try to get Patrick's sister.
Yeah.
Because that's the only virgin they know. And she does the spell and it doesn't work because she's like, oh, sorry, guys, I'm not a virgin anymore. But look at this. The whole town is burning around us. And now's the time I'm going to admit to cop dad, I'm not a virgin.
Yeah.
It was like, so ridiculous.
Well, it was funny, too, because she was like, that was with Steve, but that doesn't count. It's like, OK, no.
Oh, my another virgin.
Anybody around here?
And then you've got it's like, oh, guess we're going to have to use the child.
And the other thing too, my son's sitting next to me watching this with me, and he goes, "What's a virgin?" And I just without any context, I'm like, "Someone who's never had sex before," and just I'm like, "I'm leaving it at that. Like, we'll just let him figure it out. I don't know. Like, he'll have to ask further questions, but not now. We're watching a movie." and I don't know about you, but there's some like I get it when it's like a teenager or something. There's something about looking at like a 6-year-old, 4-year-old. Oh no, she's like four,
not great,
right?
Guys. Not great. Where she's like, doing it German with goes, stuffed the German, animal in her hands.
And the German just goes, like, oh, genius, she is a virgin. And I'm like, oh, God, Jesus Christ. Like, can we not point at kids, like little kids, and say that, please? Like, it feels a little off.
That's okay. Phoebe does it. She opens the portal, guys, and the scary German guy helps her read the German. And she does it in her tiny little voice. And then there's a
and
big
she
battle.
Says goodbye. And she says goodbye to Frankenstein.
Oh, it's so sad. I can't even think about it. I'm going to cry. I'm watching this tomorrow. I'm going to cry.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, I didn't know this until literally just this moment. But did you know that the main kid who played Sean, made a documentary about the movie in 2018. And it's called Wolfman's Got Nards.
Shut up. That's like my favorite thing. I said, what did I say to you? I'm like, you have to watch it.
You said Wolfman's Got Nards. It during this podcast. Yeah.
Yes. Well,
we found out Wolfman's Got Nards. It's a whole documentary about the movie.
Well, so probably should have watched that before we record this episode. Sorry, friends.
Yeah, it's got a bunch of people from the movie in it. So
in my notes, though, I do just want to point this out. It says, I wrote down, Eugene sends a letter to the United States Army to help them fight the monsters.
Yeah.
And don't worry, guys. The general's so confused when he shows up with the United States Army to this small town. And then Sean, he comes forward and he gives a business card and he says, sorry, General. Like, he's like, here, this will explain everything. We're the Monster Squad.
Yeah. Okay. Can there be one thing that I really critique in this? Because it's that.
I mean, I can, but it's, to me, that's like, I'm not trying to meta this because it's, to me, you can't break it down. It's too wonderful. But I think they wrote this movie from the eyes of a kid who, if a little kid wrote this movie, he would think, oh, I've seen my dad give people business cards and it solves everything. It says.
But my dad's saying. It was written by Shane Black, right? Who in the same year wrote Lethal Weapon. So and here's the thing. It's one of those things where it's like, take yourself back to the 80s. And maybe, you know, maybe my hypothesis is still potentially true, right? Because to the point, I think, what was it, 2 years earlier, The Goonies came out, which meant,
yeah,
really, with the way film works, right? A year after The Goonies came out, they're filming this movie, which means around the same time that The Goonies came out, they're like wrapping up the script for this and finalizing the details to it. So it's one of those things where I'm like, did this start as a straight up kids movie? And then they're like, oh, no, look, you can have a movie that's with kids, but it doesn't have to placate to kids. It doesn't have to be kiddie. It can be a little bit more like for all ages kind of thing, which I think The Goonies does that really well because it's a movie for kids, but also adults love it. And it's a fun adventure for all ages, for all ages. And you look at this movie, instead of the entirety of the movie sort of like riding that line, I feel like there's like some parts that are like, oh, this is more adult. And there's other parts where it's like, oh, that's like a kid's movie kind of line.
Sure.
And him writing with like essentially like crayon, like, dear army, the bad guys are here. Send everyone. And then put it in an envelope, have his dog lick the envelope and send it to the army. And the army shows up. Just like marches into town.
But like if you were that. A little kid and you wrote a movie,
yes. Yeah,
that's exactly how it would go. And I will say that when Decker was thinking about doing this movie before he had asked Black to come on and write it for him, he was talking about doing a reboot of The Little Rascals.
Okay.
And then he was also thinking about doing a reboot of Universal Monsters.
Yeah.
That's where we landed. And so it's kind of a combination of the two, right? So it's like a crossover of Little Rascals, a crossover of Universal Monsters. And then he said he watched Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein and was like, yeah, oh, I can do this from a completely different perspective.
Yeah.
And I think that's what made him land here. And also, I will say that I know that it doesn't have great reviews and ratings, and that's fine because I think most 80s kids movies don't, Goonies being an exception.
Yeah.
What is it, like 5 on Rotten Tomatoes or something? It's like 50%.
To be fair, I never looked at it.
I mean, listen, it generated 2.9 million in its first week in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it went on to to gross 3.8 million. And they spent $14 million making it.
It has a cult following. Give it that. It does.
I watched it the first time we went to Alamo Drafthouse and watched it with some friends. And it was so fun. Everyone in the audience was older. And it was just like going back to that being a little kid where you can turn your head off and just be a little kid in the 80s and like not talk about how awful the...
Yeah.
Special effects are and how cringy moments are. You can just like appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah.
And also there's very good messages in that. And, you know, scary German guy, we learn he was a concentration camp prisoner.
I'm
that's a little hard to understand.
But that's what I mean. That's the stuff where, like, knowing Shane Black's kind of writing, where, like, it's like, oh, he was scary, but now he's not scary. And he's teaching, he's like reading, translating this thing for us. And then as the kids leave, he like puts his hand up on the door frame, like just leaning up against it. And we, and like the camera like tightens in on the tattoo of his like numbers from the concentration camp, and then just cuts away to like the next scene. And I'm just like, oh, Jesus Christ, that's really heavy. And like, really, like, who is this movie for? I don't understand who this movie's for, but I, maybe that's the allure to it. And to be fair, I was reading a little bit more, and I saw the comparison. Number one, the director, Fred Decker, said he had never even seen The Goonies when he made the movie. So if anything, it's one of those things of like, maybe it was a little bit of Game of Telephone of like, I understand if he's trying to say like, oh, like it, I didn't even see the movie, hence I couldn't have made it like The Goonies, which is fair because that's not like The Goonies. But it seems like there's like little elements of it that are very like, you know, closely compared, a la Chunk or Fat Kid.
Oh.
You know, but with that, yeah, no, I get that. But at the same time, too, like it's all over the place. The other movie I started compared to here was The Lost Boys, which was a straight up R.
I loved that movie.
I've never seen that one either.
So. What?
Yeah, I know. But with that, where my whole point was, if you just like put The Lost Boys and The Goonies and all the B movies they're sort of trying to, you know, touch on, like Dracula and all that, in a blender, you get this one.
Some drama on set.
Oh.
Decker brought on who at the time was his, I'm not going to say idol, but he brought someone on to help him.
Okay.
Because he had never done this before, right? So, so he brought on Peter Hyams, who was a very big producer at the time for Universal, and they clashed the whole time. Mm. And Hyams wanted to fire Decker the first week. And with Hyams, he brought like all of his big team of, you know, cameramen and lighting, like everything that he was working with, and as well as the people doing the monsters. So it couldn't have happened without him, but they did not work well together. And then what ended up happening is at the end, they cut a lot of scenes, which makes certain things in there not... You can't really understand what's happening because you lose a chunk of like probably pretty important dialogue. Yeah. But Hyams is like, no, it can't be more than 90 minutes. 90 minutes is all we can do. 90 minutes, 90 minutes. And so they ended up cutting, I think they said like 13 or 23 minutes of the film that Decker says if we had put in, the movie would make a lot more sense. Because you know when they cut stuff and you just watch this fresh eyes, you can see where a conversation was happening and then all of a sudden they're in another scene. And there's no conclusion to the conversation.
Well, I mean, that was one of my things, too, with the greaser kid, who's the cool kid, who rescues Fat Kid from being bullied. And it's sort of like never explained, like, why does he come out of like nowhere, like help this kid and then just be like, I want to be in your club. And then just like want to. And then it's also explained like he's older than these other kids. So it's like, why does he want to hang out with these kids? Like, there's a lot of things that felt like it was missing and cut.
Yeah.
You can definitely feel it. So, yeah, I see what you're saying there, because I can see that there's little missing pieces to the puzzle around here.
Well, in 2008, Rob Cohen said the film rights were back on Paramount's desk to make a remake and that he wanted nothing to do with it. And then in 2010, Michael Bay had signed on to produce it with Cohen to direct. And then Michael and Brian Gunn were going to write screenplay.
Yeah.
And then in 2014, it all went downhill. It just stopped.
I was surprised that like. Fred Decker really didn't do much after this. I mean, he did some small stuff here and there, and for what it's worth, right, sort of like stuck to his guns and wrote what he was interested in. He wrote and directed a few episodes of Tales from the Crypt, which was a great anthology series.
That's what made me a spooky, creepy kid, is my parents went to bed, my mom worked nights, and I would stay up watching Tales of the Crypt because I was a sick kid who didn't go to elementary school, and I was like, I'm 7, let's watch this at 4 a.m. No one will stop me.
And then he wrote and directed with Frank Miller RoboCop 3, which the RoboCop series itself is like so back and forth. Oh, did you ever see RoboCop?
Yeah, of course I have.
I can never pronounce his name properly, so please, please pardon me. But Paul Verhoeven, famously, he did RoboCop. He did Total Recall. He did Starship Troopers. Like, RoboCop and Starship Troopers, both movies that aren't what they seem. Like, on the surface, they look like they're like, yeah, fun, shoot 'em up. Like, in reality, it's making a commentary on that kind of concept of, you know, police state and RoboCop and Starship Troopers, just like the military industrial complex. And then they get misinterpreted by everybody, and they do sequels to those movies, which completely throw out, you know, and they embrace the thing that he was sort of making fun of in the first place. I believe, if I remember correctly, RoboCop 3 was one of the better ones. Am I remembering that correctly?
I liked all of them, but also I'm a kid who grew up watching Charles Bronson and Jean-Claude Van Damme movies and Steven Seagal and thought they were masterpieces. So,
yeah. And then Frank Miller, who did, you know, comic books, Frank Miller, co-wrote RoboCop 2 and then came on to do this one with Frank Decker for 3. But I'll say, like, he kept doing like scary movies and like stuck to that. A lot of unproduced things that he never got either credit for or just worked on a script or just didn't get produced. He tried to produce a Johnny Quest movie.
I saw that, and he like poured his heart and soul into that, and it was no go.
I read somewhere else too. I think him and Shane Black tried to do that together at some point, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't know if that was that project or something earlier.
Well, I've got something to make you really sad.
Oh no.
The actor Brent Chalam, he died, who played Fat Kid. He died from pneumonia at 22.
Oh my God, really?
In 1997. So it's kind of a bummer because a lot of these kids, obviously, I don't think they went on to do a lot more, obviously, with the exception of some, but it got a huge resurgence in popularity as the fans of it got older. And like I said, it did the Alamo Drafthouse tour more than once.
Yeah.
And it kind of sucks when that kind of stuff happens because he can't see that like people still love it.
Yeah.
You know, I hate that I'm late to the game, but I love it.
Of pneumonia? That's insane.
Of pneumonia. I know. That's such like a, you have died of dysentery. Like,
yeah.
Oregon Trail. But just a couple accolades. So this version of Dracula was actually on the list of 100 greatest villains ever, got number 30.
Hmm.
And Liam Neeson almost was Dracula. He lost out to the role.
I've never seen a version of Dracula that walks around chucking dynamite in place.
I love it. Love it.
That's my favorite part.
There was also apparently a fight that they were going to do where Dracula had a fight with Van Helsing using a machine gun. So that
like
would
Van
have been
Helsing was going to have a machine gun.
That would have been incredible. Could you imagine, though, just watch if that had happened, would that have been to you like, I can't do this?
I mean, I feel this like it would have been way over the top. I mean, that would have been the, I mean, there's a lot over the top in this movie in general, but it, which is okay. I think it's how you view it. Like if it's viewed as like a, oh, it's a fun kid movie versus, you know, whatever. I need a name for it, but whatever the category of like a Goonies movie is, where it's like sort of for kids, but also for adults kind of thing. I mean, the other thing, too, that got me, I will say, the one thing I was like, oh, what am I watching here? Like this almost lost me was the random montage in the middle of the movie, because hear me out for 1 second. Like usually for movies like this, there's like a lead up of like, oh, man, we got to take them down. We got to do this. We got to do that. And to your point, again, a lot of stuff had been cut out. So maybe there was this scene, but there was never a lead up to like, all right, let's do this. We got to prepare for this battle we're going to have tonight, or we're going to go after the monster, whatever. And then it just randomly cuts to a music montage, very 80s music. And then the one kid's making business cards. And then the I keep calling him the greaser kid. I forgot the character's name. Is it Rudy?
Yeah. Ryan, played by Ryan Lambert.
Is that the one? Is it Rudy or Eugene? I don't know which one it is. He's the only one actually making weapons, right? He's in shop class making wooden stakes and silver bullets and all these other things. Give him a lot of credit. He was the OG in that team. They couldn't have done it without him.
I agree. And I'm just going to say a couple of things that I learned about this movie that make me love it even more. So the little girl, Ashley Bank, that plays Phoebe, clearly my favorite character because I identify with her.
You identified with her immediately, didn't you?
Absolutely. You know the part where Dracula like picks her up and she screams? That was real. They made, holy like, she didn't shit. Know that was going to happen. They wanted to have like a real response. Also, Frankenstein and Dracula never, ever, ever were out of costume or out of character in front of the kids. Ever.
Okay. Yeah, that's a fair.
Yeah, they wanted the kids to see them in full makeup. But if the guy that played Dracula was ever around Ashley Banks, he never would have offset. He wouldn't have his red contact lenses or his fangs in. Because there's that scene when he, you know, lifts her up by her chin and he holds her. So that scene, he shows her the sharp teeth and she sees his red eyes for the first time. So she was truly terrified.
Yeah.
Great for the scene.
Yeah.
Scarring for the child.
Yeah.
And then she said she never even met the guy, Tom Noonan, who played Frankenstein. She never met him until she was 25 years old.
Oh, wow. That's out of costume.
That's any time he was even out of costume in the world and he saw little kid fans that would recognize him. I'm sure it was like parents being like, hey, that's the guy that plays Frankenstein in Monster Squad. Tom Noonan wouldn't talk. He would just grunt at the kids like he was Frankenstein. I love that.
That's great. Can I tell you one of my favorite parts?
Maybe yes.
This is more about like the movie magic of it all. I thought that the way they did the mummy was awesome. And so when they fight with air quotes there, like the mummy, like in the car, I don't want to give too much away, but like that scene is amazing. Like the way the mummy is depicted and everything. I love that. I thought that was like really good classic movie magic and done really well. So,
well,
high appreciation for that.
The casting for that part is hilarious. Yeah. They put an ad out in a casting advertisement that says we're looking for an extremely thin and tall actor on the verge of anorexia. And the gentleman, Michael Reed McKay, that plays the mummy was like a friend and him were out and they were like, this could be you. And he's like, was I embarrassed? Maybe, but I got the part of the money. It's hilarious. And also, I mean, I think we should just mention the names. We already said who played Frankenstein and him, but we should probably just mention who played the other people. So Tom Noonan played Frankenstein. Dracula was played by Duncan Rhaegar.
Has he been in anything else?
I don't know things that I know. He was in Zorro. He was in Wizards and Warriors, Last Days of Pompeii, The Banker. And then in the 2000s, I think we kind of lose him a little bit because he played in Blood Surf and Earth Star Voyager in 1988. In 2000, he played in Blood Surf. And that was it. He is, I believe, hold on. I'm seeing things about him in Star Trek. He plays Ronan in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Really?
You should know this. You're the Trekkie.
I'm becoming a Trekkie. I'm not
a Trekkie
there
the
yet.
Way I'm a member of the Hogwarts community. I get it.
I don't know it as well as you do. Also, to be clear, I think is this correct? He was in Deep Space Nine. I'm not a Deep Space Nine person. I keep it real. I stick with Next Gen. That's where
I get that. He was also in Billy the Kid. Oh my God. He was in some things that I know.
I will say, I feel like it unlocked a memory because you mentioned he was in Zorro.
Yes.
But it was like the TV series that was on the like Family Channel. Mm-hmm. Does that unlock a memory for you that there was a Zorro TV series?
Yeah, absolutely it does.
Yeah.
That was around the same time as like the Xena Warrior Princess TV show and the Hercules. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What a time for television. I'll tell you.
Syndicated television.
Yes. And who played the Gill? Tom Woodruff Jr.
Yeah.
Goes on to play the Gill monster, who I will honestly say fucking scary. I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Yeah. The weird thing for me, though, is like half the time I was sitting there being like, I don't know the name of this monster. I kept forgetting.
Gillman, I think, is what his official name is. But he won an Academy Award for his special effects work in 1992 for Death Becomes Her.
Yeah.
And he was in Alien 3. I mean, really big in the horror and animal world. He was in Pumpkinhead, which I don't know if you've seen that. That's a fucked up movie.
No, I haven't.
Alien versus Predator in 2004. Alien versus Predator 2007. So I think he's just known as a monster in this world. And I think that's incredible.
Yeah, it's okay.
He was special effects in Starship Troopers. Why can't I say that?
Well, that's another... I feel like there's a connection there, right? Because it's all like the Paul Vanderhoof.
Yeah.
There's a 6 degrees of in the way that all connects.
And I'm not a huge horror film buff, but I have friends who are. And I feel like he went on to get some decent notoriety in that world, which there is something to be said about the people that do those things. So you're not just a body in a suit acting. Like, yeah. you have to be able to move a certain way and, you know, make the noises you need to make. And I mean, those bodily movements, they're not normal.
Right.
You're not just like walking down the street. You're like a creep. I don't know. I find that stuff fascinating because that's not a normal job to be played. A special shout to Michael Reed McKay that played the mummy.
Yeah.
He was creepy as hell.
Yeah. What I want to know is there are so many people, right? Because I was looking at like the dad, Robert Lesser, who was in this. And he, like the wife, was also in Die Hard. There are so many people connected to like Die Hard and like Starship Troopers and the Paul Vanderhoesen, movies. Like, I don't know what the connection is here, but like, it's always interesting to me. Like, there's a thread. Like, was it Mary Ellen Trainer who's like, oh, like, you know, you got to bring along the guy who played my husband in Monster Squad, which for a movie full of people that, like, again, we said, like, the kids are pretty much like, this is pretty much what they did. And then they didn't really pop up elsewhere. The rest of the cast are like sort of like hidden gems in other movies throughout like the rest of the 80s and 90s, which is kind of funny.
Well, Lisa Fuller, who plays the, you know, Lisa Rhodes, the sister who's not a virgin. She was in Teen Witch, which I loved, loved.
The original Teen Witch.
Yeah, the original Teen Witch show. She was in Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah.
She was in Baby Boom. She was like the hot girl. And some of these things, and then just stopped existing after the 80s.
That's really interesting.
She was an Imps in 2009. I don't know what that is. Yeah. I don't think we should be sharing that with people. The kids, I mean, we found out the one kid unfortunately died of pneumonia.
Yeah. The kid who played Sean literally went on to make a documentary about this movie because.
Sure did.
It was his one big, big role.
And he apparently was in quite a few soap operas.
Okay.
And went on to be into other horror movies, Baby Frankenstein and that kind of stuff. But a lot of those kids, they didn't go on to get the fame that the kids in the Goonies got. So I guess calling it a ripoff Goonies isn't fair, but...
Not for them. I think when you look in the totality and you look at the movie, like, you know, the way this came out and the fact that, like, they tried to make a movie, but then they cut half the things. They trimmed the budget down to, like, not allow it to do what they wanted to do. It becomes unfair for the filmmakers. I'll give them that. It's what they made of it is fun. And again, I think it goes to your personality too. Like just how you are with like there's the big ugly monster and it has a kind heart and you're just like, oh, I want to rescue that thing. You are to this movie as well. Where it's,
and I misspoke earlier. I said that it was the way I was with Chunk and the Goonies, who I also love, but I meant Sloth. So everyone knows what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like that with a lot of things in life in general, where like, you're like,
it's annoying for people. And I feel bad because we'll be out doing things and someone's just a straight up asshole to us or just being a piece of shit. And I'm like, oh, but he could have a bad home life. Oh, but she's got a good heart. I wish I could not be like that.
You would rescue every three-legged dog. We actually, to be clear, outside our studio.
Oh my gosh.
We walked outside.
I got so emotional. You saw
a three-legged dog. And there's something to your personality where it's not about rescuing every dog in the world. It's the ones that you know aren't as loved as the others because it has three legs.
I just want to hold it and tell it it's okay. Oh,
it's a dog. It doesn't know he's not loved as much as the cute puppy.
PETA. What? We should stop talking about this before I cry.
By the way, did you know that Gary German guy? I mean, you know, he was up in your neck of the woods, but he died in Woodstock, New York.
Oh, I love Woodstock. Great town. Sorry for him. But can we just talk about a couple things?
Yes, we can.
Sorry, Scary German. Point out, guy's dead.
Yeah, I was going to say, sorry. That was all I had. He didn't really do much.
Wait, hold on. Yeah. That's my emotion to that. But I almost started crying thinking about the three-legged dog that walked by the studio. Let's just talk about that for a second. So, you know, right before the credits roll and Sean, played by Andre Gower, who's like, you know, the victorious kid. So they've just taken down the monster. So he looks in the camera lens and he says, "We are the Monster Squad." I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. For you, you're probably like, that's so corny. But I love that in the fun facts, two things. Number one, Decker told him, "You got to do this like Clint Eastwood. Just look in the camera and do it like Clint." That's literally what he told this child because he wanted it to sound cool without getting campy. I don't think that worked. I still loved it. But this was only in the movie theaters for 2 weeks before it got pulled.
Sorry.
Come on. But then once it hit video rentals and cable, it blew up again. 2 weeks? Yeah. Are you for serious? Wait, this is one of our fun favorite things to do. What else came out the weekend that this came out? Because sometimes it's not fair.
Man. Okay. Let's take a, we're going to dive down this rabbit hole. While you pull that up, though, I'll save this a little bit. So apparently you mentioned a lot of stuff had been cut out, right?
Yes.
This was on TV. This is the other thing that confused me is I said you and I both grew up on cable television. So most of the stuff that we know is from cable TV. This was on cable TV. Apparently TNT used to show this movie in the 90s. On the TV version, there are additional scenes that were cut from theatrical version. In the opening scene, immediately following the opening title, one of Van Helsing's men fights off one of the vampire women and accidentally pulls the stake out of Dracula's chest, resurrecting the Count. So I guess in that they do stab the Count and it's like, oh, okay, he should be dead. And this explains why he's not dead, because the stake was pulled out. There is more of a comedy routine between the two pilots that were flying with the Dracula and Frankenstein coffin thing.
Okay.
Probably to that Abbott and Costello thing that you were talking about before. Yep. Decker was probably trying to do a little bit to that. There's a scene with Phoebe and her mother in the kitchen. The mother tells Phoebe to go watch her favorite TV show, but Phoebe says her PTA won't let her on the grounds it contains too much sex, which leads her mother to retort under her breath, "We could use a little sex in this house."
Mom.
I don't understand.
Mom.
You know what's funny? Again, I know they were trying to be different, and apparently he hadn't seen the Goonies, whereas in that one, you know, the parents are battling with losing their house. In this, the parents are battling with divorce.
Yeah, you know what? It's a bit triggering, as the kids say these days.
Yeah, and literally you hear like them arguing in the other room, like she's mad at the husband for working too much, and he's a police officer, and he's explaining about how he's getting called about mummies being lost in from a museum.
And it's like a really big problem. He's like, oh, God, I got to go in. These monsters are taking over the town.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're about to get divorced and you want to bang everyone else.
There's an extended scene where the boys are discussing whether or not they know what a virgin is, leading them to ask Rudy if he knows any. It's when the boys and Frankenstein go to the mansion to retrieve the amulet, there is an additional scene showing them approaching the house where Horace expresses his fear, which I thought in the version I saw he did, where he kept like going on like a tangent about why they shouldn't go in. But maybe, I don't know, maybe that wasn't in the other cut. And then a scene of Rudy putting his arm around Patrick's sister to her disgust as they observe the carnage following the movie's finale. So Rudy tries hitting on Patrick's sister and she is not
get it, Rudy?
It.
I know. I know. Good for him. I'm just saying he's a little heartthrob.
I mean, he did try to blackmail her with like, you know, nude photos of her. So
yeah, not great. Not a great move.
Yeah, acceptable in the 80s. It was, as Calvin Harris puts it was acceptable in the 80s.
Well, they were up against some bad shit. So,
okay, what are we at?
The week before,
okay,
the Lost Boys came out. Okay, the same.
Yeah.
And then Masters of the Universe came out. I'm sorry, 2 weeks before Lost Boys came out. The week before Masters of the Universe came out, and so did Stakeout. Okay. Then Monster Squad, and then the same weekend as Monster Squad, Can't Buy Me Love, the same day, Can't Buy Me Love was released. And so, as well as the Garbage Pail Kids movie, and they beat that out. So that's good.
That's easy.
And Back to the Beach, which I don't know what that is, but that came out at the same time. Yeah. And they just beat out the Care Bears Adventure in Wonderland. So they got that going for them. But the Lost Boys, I think, really killed them.
Yeah.
And The Living Daylights also came out. And RoboCop came out 2 weeks before that. They were not at a good time. This was bad. Superman 4, RoboCop, La Bamba. Great movie. Tom, it gets worse. It gets worse. The weekend after.
Mm-hmm. This is late summer 87, by the way.
Yeah. The weekend after Dirty Dancing and Apocalypse Now did a re-release. And Dirty Dancing came out. They were done. It's game over.
They were just
and
like,
that's when they got pulled. That's the weekend they got pulled.
Ah, Jesus Christ. Also, what's really weird is according to IMDb, this was an HBO production, but I do not ever remember seeing this on HBO. So I don't know.
Either. I was probably watching Real Sex at that point. So,
yeah.
Just saying. Well, if you have not, I know by the time this airs, Halloween will have cometh and gone. But if you want to keep that spooky season alive.
Yeah.
And you're willing to put aside a little bit of judgment.
Yeah.
It's very enjoyable. I love it.
I'll put it this way. It was fun because I hadn't seen it before. But I feel like, especially if you have seen it, like for you, Amanda, I feel like the concept of like you showing this to your kids or like people showing it to their kids is interesting because I'm always looking for more of these movies.
If I ever have a human child, I can't wait to. I can't wait to see my fiance show it to our children because he loves it. This is like, this is his nostalgic childhood movie. And it reminds him of watching movies with his dad and his brothers. And I love that he shared it with me because I love it. And the time that we had gone to the movie theaters to see it, we were seeing it with my friends, Lauren and Jack, who were diehard Monster Squad fans. And they're Henry's age.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, maybe I'm just a little bit too young to have watched this because I was born in 87 and they were like rip roaring ready to go. But
no, I was born in 84. I don't remember this at all. Okay. Like never crossed my path at all until you were the one who pitched it to me.
All right. Well, you're welcome. You can write me a thank me note if you want to. But I highly recommend watching it.
Can I just point out one other thing too? In 1983, Michael Ciambello did the song Maniac for the soundtrack to Flashdance, right? One of the biggest.
Yes.
And what was the song he did for this movie as part of that?
What is it?
I'm pretty sure it's the one for that music montage I was sort of trashing a little bit.
That I love.
That was, I know.
Give me all the corny.
Yeah.
Although I'm going to say something.
Yeah.
I feel like Monster Squad walked so Stranger Things could run.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like
it's
I think
a starter pack, right? Like it brought it back to the 80s. It's kids fighting monsters.
Yes.
Obviously very different production value and all of that kind of stuff. But I think it walked so that Stranger Things could run.
Is it fair? And again, maybe it's not because to your point, like your fiance, this is like so near and dear to him. And so I'll ask this without him being able to actually answer the question. But I feel like this one I'd be OK with them remaking because I feel like they can make it better. They can fix the gap.
I can ask him right now. You can ask him.
What do you think? I mean, is it fair? Like, do you feel like this is one where it's 100% make it? OK, we'll see what he says. But you get what I'm saying, right? Because like to your point, with budget cuts and script trimmings and all this other stuff, it's like, yeah, if you fix this one up, you polish this one up. Because remember, I started this by saying it felt like a good movie that just was missing a little bit of polish. And you gave me the backstory to why it was sort of unpolished. I feel like if it got that, yeah, no, I'd be okay with them remaking this. Maybe this is Universal's way in of fixing their inability to do anything with their catalog of Universal monsters. They wanted to a couple years ago. They tried to throw big bucks at it with a Monsters Universe thing that just didn't pan out. And then well, now you got this.
All right. Please hold. I'm going to see if I can get him to answer me. Hold on. Listeners, this will be cut. Folks, he hemmed, he hawed, the dogs barked, and he said, that's a tough one. Yes.
Yeah.
That's all we got out of it. We like this game, Tom.
Yeah.
Who would we cast?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's think about this.
This is a fun game. This is one of our favorite games. Now, you know what, though? I'm going to tell you right now, I automatically go to the Stranger Things kids, and we can't do that.
You can't. First off, they don't even want to be in Stranger Things anymore, like much less any other.
By the time they do Stranger Things again, they're going to be 27.
Well, who is young Hollywood at this point? Like, who are young
kids? I don't know. And it feels a little creepy if I try to figure it out. Like, who are the cool 10-year-olds?
You'd have to have fresh faces. You'd have to have all fresh faces for the kids. But for the monsters and the parents and all that, we can do that.
Monsters, parents? Yeah, okay. Okay, so for the dad, I've got it already. Mark Jake Johnson. Oh.
Mark Jake Johnson?
Jake Johnson. Jake Johnson.
Oh, Jake Johnson. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I can see that. That makes sense to me. Because he's sort of like that gruffy, like, oh, I can't take this anymore.
Gruffy dad who can be funny, but also kind of serious.
Well, I feel like the dad needed that. Like he could use a little bit of like softening around the edges. He's sitting there chain smoking at work, being like, my fucking wife wants to, like, I don't want to go home. My wife wants a divorce. Before we get there too, I did not understand the sidekick cop who was just like yelling all the time for no reason. I didn't understand him whatsoever. I was like, what was going on there? He reminded me of like, and especially during that time period, he reminded me of like a knockoff Keith David. And there's that meme going around right now of Keith David from Leprechaun or whatever, just like, welcome to hell, motherfucker. And I'm just like, that's who I feel like they wanted to cast in this. And it just like, he wasn't available. He was off shooting They Live or something. But I feel like that would have been the proper at that time. That's, I don't know who he'd do now, though.
Yeah. Okay, so I have an idea for the mom. So if we have Jake Johnson as the dad.
Zooey Deschanel.
Okay. No, I was going to say Emma Stone. I think Emma Stone could be really funny as a young mom.
But they can't be fighting over divorce, right? Like they can't. We gotta fix that part of the script here too.
Okay, fine.
Okay, but if,
and all right. Also, I've got Dracula in the bag. Who do you think I'm going to say?
Oh, man. I don't know. Because the thing is, Dracula doesn't talk much either. Like, he's not a big character, but he's a very important character.
But, like, in that movie, he's, like, very, like, sexy and suave and, like, mysterious. I was going to say Oscar Isaac. I could see him doing Dracula.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? Okay, that's all I got. all I got. Who would you say for the mom?
For the mom? Well, it's got to be someone mom-esque, right? You got to find someone who's mom material now. Is Emma Stone in like the mom phase yet, or is she still clinging?
She's our age, so she's got to be up there. God,
that's depressing.
I'm just saying, like, if she's like 37, 38, you've got a kid who's similar age of these kids.
Jillian Jacobs.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really good one, and I love her. Oh, that's really good because she can be kind of trashy, angry, and smoke a cigarette, and I like that.
But also because I think the scene that stuck out for me from the original was when the mom is screaming when Dracula is literally holding her daughter up by the neck. That's my pick there. We got to figure out Frankenstein's monster. I feel like that's the major one here.
Who's tall enough?
I mean, the guy who played him originally probably can come back still.
He can come back. Oh,
you know who's tall in real life? And now I'm just pulling people from the cast of Community at this point.
I knew exactly what you were going to say, Joel McHale.
Yeah,
I knew it.
Because I have a picture with him and he's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, he's very tall. I was going to say Joel McHale. You know who else I was going to say?
Who?
Conan O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
Could he play actually, really lovable and like, you know, he could play funny lovable.
Let's see here. Who's some other tall actors? The Rock is 6'5", but let's not make this a Rock movie. Oh, I got one. Who's also 6'5".
Armie Hammer because he eats people. Oh, no. Oh. Okay. Because he is 6'5".
Who did Sophie Vergara's last husband?
Joe Manganiello.
Yeah. Is it too small of a part for him? I mean, I feel like he couldn't put on that much makeup to make him. I mean, maybe that's not the right fit, though. Who we got? Who else?
Jeff Goldblum. He's 6'4".
Yeah, but he'd play a weird Frankenstein. He'd be like,
what about Alexander Skarsgård? He could do that. He already looks kind of weird.
Did you also Google tall actors?
Of course I did. I've got Snoop Dogg at 6'4". Let's do Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Jason Momoa could do it. No, Jason Momoa. Would be, I'm thinking him for the Gill Man or the Wolf Man.
Okay. Well, the Wolf Man has to be someone that's like sort of like.
We're thinking about this the wrong way because Joel McHale and Conan O'Brien are skinny, so they should be the mummy. We need a jack dude to be Frankenstein because he's supposed to be huge and muscular.
But you never see the mummy. I saw the actor play him. Like, you don't.
We're
see
writing a bigger part for him. A bigger part for him. Okay. And Jason Momoa could probably do the Frankenstein situation here.
Yeah.
All right. We're getting out of control here. Wolfman. I don't know. Someone hairy. Pedro Pascal.
Did you said Oscar Isaac. At some point.
I'm going to make Pedro Pascal somewhere.
Pedro Pascal was coming in there somewhere too. Yeah. I mean, I knew.
What about Jason Segel? He's 6'4" and he's great.
We haven't seen him in anything recently too. So I feel
I really miss him.
Yeah.
I hope he wants to hang out with us sometime. He's in Shrinking. We have to watch Shrinking. Yeah. That's been recommended to us quite a bit.
Tyler Perry's 6'5".
Okay. Tyler Perry would be killer as a Frankenstein. Yeah. He'd be incredible. Vincent D'Onofrio is 6'4".
Oh, Vincent D'Onofrio Vincent D'Onofrio as Frankenstein. Monster. That's it. That's my pick.
That's really good because he's lovable, but can also be very scary.
He can do that deep voice too. Like
Wolfman, I don't know. He's got nards, so it's gonna have to be someone. with Nards.
That one I feel like is more like a sillier character, because it's got to be someone who's like sort of like, it could be John Oliver. No, I got it.
Okay, I'm ready.
Have you watched Righteous Gemstones?
Yes.
Uncle Billy.
Oh my God, that's a very good one. That's a good one.
Okay, that's a very good one.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll allow it.
I feel like that's a good
one. I'll allow it.
Yeah.
All right, well, we've cast the movie, folks. You're there welcome. You
yeah, you're done. Your move, Hollywood.
We're here for whatever need you have.
Yeah, so that's about it.
All right,
that's
we'll be drafting your proposal letters later this week.
Happy spooky season.
Well, thank
season.
You for watching it. Yeah, happy spooky season, everyone. I hope you enjoyed your Halloweeny and you had more treats than tricks.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've missed you. And back to regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah. Don't forget to catch all the 7 other podcasts that Amanda is starring in at this point. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, I get around in life and on podcasts, I guess. A new one coming up, so stay tuned for that announcement. But we do still have episodes of Folktown talking about local Sleepy Hollow. You can listen to that wherever you get your favorite podcast. And don't forget to give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, The Tick and The Talk. And also rate, review, and subscribe. That stuff really helps us out, guys. So we can continue to give you free merch. I'm just going to keep saying that. Free merch. If
free
you
merch.
Want it, shoot us a message on the Instagrams.
Yeah, cool.
All right. Thanks. Happy Halloween.
See ya. Bye.